This weekend, I asked NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg for her opinion on something in the news. She refused.
Because my opinion's no better than anybody else's opinion. You can make your own judgment about that.
It's just us.
Us and over 800 New Hampshire Public Radio listeners who packed the Capital Center for the Arts in Concord for an event sponsored by Constitutionally Speaking. That's a consortium of groups trying to galvanize dialogue about civics. Nina Totenberg needs no prodding. She touched on things like the recent recovery of her father Roman's stolen Stradivarius. The rallying cry now for conservative Republicans, she says it's no more Souters, Souter being the moderate former justice from New Hampshire, David Souter, who was in the audience. Then there was the story of Justice Ginsburg falling asleep during the president's State of the Union. She told Nina it was because lawmakers can jump up and down.
And she said, and then she said, but we sit there sober as judges. And then she said, except that, of course, I wasn't entirely sober.
But with the Supreme Court's new session starting today, we started by talking about what it might face. Here are some excerpts.
Can anything match June of last year and all the cases of the last session?
Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, there are few times when there's that kind of thunderous opinion as same-sex marriage, much less Obamacare II and some other important decisions. So probably you could count on two hands the numbers of opinions since 1965 or something like that that are of that importance, and that everybody understands from the very beginning are of that importance. So probably not, but there are one or two cases, really one case this term, that could end up being that important, though I doubt it.
Well, let's start with that.
So the court has not yet accepted this case for review, but it's sitting there waiting in the wings, and I think it probably will. And it's a test of the Texas abortion statute, which has been copied by other states. So it's significant in the sense that it's not just Texas, it's other states as well. And abortion clinics have to follow the same structural rules as a hospital, basically. And that's extremely costly and would automatically cut the number of abortion clinics in the state by well over a half.
And in Texas in particular, it also is impossible in some areas because it's so rural.
Yes, and it's a huge state.
Yeah.
So women would have to travel, in some cases, up to 300 miles round trip. The lower court upheld it, saying only some 900,000 women might possibly face that trip. But the point is that the court has said there can't be an undue burden on the right to have an abortion. So, and then the other thing is those who perform abortions have to have privileges at a hospital within 30 miles. And given the politics of abortion politics these days, that is often impossible. They import people to be doctors at these clinics. So if those kinds of restrictions, and there are more, are upheld, I think it's fair to say, while abortions would be relatively easy to obtain in some other states, they would not be in probably half the country or more.
Where do you think it's going to go?
It's hard to know. Justice Kennedy has supported the right to an abortion, but has rarely, almost ever, been willing to strike down restrictions on the right to abortion. So at some point, the so-called undue burden test could become pretty meaningless, because if all you have to have is a rational basis for enacting these kinds of restrictions, and that is the lowest threshold, then Roe versus Wade is, for all practical purposes, eliminated. You may not say we're reversing Roe versus Wade today, but that's, in point of fact, what's happening.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on that case. I was interested in the death penalty cases.
Well, there are a whole bunch of them this year, but none of them addresses the question that Justice Breyer raised at the end of last term. He said he thought it was time to revisit the question of whether the death penalty is cruel and unusual punishment.
This was in the Glossop case considering lethal injections.
Then he raised a bunch of issues not really related to lethal injections. But he pointed to studies that show not just that there are racial disparities in the way it's administered, but serious geographical disparities. when you have those sort of disparities, the question he raises is that constitutional? And then he raised a bunch of other questions about whether you can actually say that it's a deterrent when it's so rarely used, and most importantly, the question of the number of people who have been on death row who are subsequently proved innocent through DNA testing. And I think there's probably a lot of work to be done yet to prove some of these points to a better certainty. He, after all, suggested only that the time had come for the court to reconsider the question. And I don't expect the court is going to reconsider the question anytime soon. But I expect those who oppose the death penalty will seek to have some empirical data that doesn't exist today on the question. I'm going to tell you about one or two cases that are not involving the death penalty. There's a very important labor case for, oh, I don't know, 40 years or so. It was 1977 that the Supreme Court ruled that if a majority of workers in the public sector decide to be represented by a union, other public employees within that group of people do not have to join the union. They don't have to pay for the political activities of the union, but they do have to pay their fair share of the bargaining costs because they benefit from the contract right. That is subsequently negotiated. And a great many states have laws that say when there's a union bargaining agreement, it applies to everyone, that you can't negotiate for half the people there and not for the other half of the people. So since they benefit from the contract that's struck, they have to pay their fair share of the bargaining costs. And there are clearly four justices who think it is time to reverse this. And the fifth justice, who in the past has supported the idea of fair share payments, is Justice Scalia. And so if he does what it looks like he's going to do, which is side with his fellow conservatives on this question and say this is a violation of the non-members' First Amendment rights because anything that a union does is a political subject of debate, therefore, the non-members shouldn't have to pay for it. If that is the case and the court reverses the case called Abood from 1977, it will seriously hobble public employee unions and potentially, ultimately, other unions. So for unions, this is pretty much a last stand legal argument, and they will be seriously hobbled if they lose this one. And there's quite a serious reason to think they will lose this one.
I want to get your thoughts, Nina, on how the Constitution has been spoken of in the presidential race. Ted Cruz says that he will amend it to end birthright citizenship. Now, Donald Trump is against birthright citizenship, the idea of someone is born here, even to parents who are not citizens, they have a birthright. But he says, you know, it would take way too long to change it. So let's just say that it doesn't mean people who were born to people who are children of undocumented immigrants. Let's just say that it doesn't mean them. As you're listening to the Constitution invoked this way, your thoughts?
Robin, that's not fair. I did a piece talking about the way that the various candidates talked about not just the Supreme Court, but John Roberts, the Chief Justice. And, you know, John Roberts has a very conservative record. He was a dissenter in the same-sex marriage cases. He has voted against any racial preferences, against affirmative action. He wrote the opinion striking down the key provision of the Voting Rights Act. He has consistently voted to strike down regulations governing campaign spending. And so there's only one subject on which he has cast a vote that conservatives don't like, and that's Obamacare. Everybody was talking about him during that second debate. You would have thought he was a liberal like William O. Douglas. I mean, it was sort of bizarre for anybody who knows anything about the court.
Much was made of Republicans when those cases came out, saying, well, it's just the Supreme Court. I mean, why is the Supreme Court getting to judge, things like health care?
Somebody has to. That's the way
that's
the Constitution is written.
Right. But Hillary Clinton has come out and said that she wants to push for an amendment to, in effect, overturn the 2010 Citizens United decision. And, well, but isn't that the same? You know, isn't that someone saying the court was wrong?
Lots of times people say the court was wrong, and if you're lucky, it's not a constitutional ruling, it's a statutory ruling, and you can get Congress to go back and change the law. But if the decision is based on the Constitution, then the only way to change it is by a constitutional amendment. And there's nothing wrong with trying to have a constitutional amendment, except that all those of you folks who clapped that she favored a constitutional amendment, I defy you to sit down and try to write something about the First Amendment that would change it in a way that would not open a door to something you would really hate a lot.
Thank you so much, Nina Totenberg. Thank you.
Thank you all.